This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, everyone. It is Denise Salcedo. Welcome back to the channel. I am very excited to introduce to you my guest for today. He is the leader of the House of Black, All Elite Wrestling's very own Malachi Black. What's up, Malachi?
How you guys doing?
Very awesome to have you on here. You know, I've been wanting to chat with you for a while now because I've been such a big fan of your work and getting to see everything that you've been doing as of late. So I was very excited when I scored this interview officially with you.
Well, there we go. You have me.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's go ahead and jump right into things. We're heading into this massive weekend with Forbidden Door, the first ever AEW New Japan Pro Wrestling joint pay-per-view show. So before we get into your match and all of that, I kind of want to ask you what your thoughts were when Tony Khan made this announcement.
So right before I moved to the United States, and even like tracking back longer, you know, I have to tell a little bit of a pre-story before I can answer your question in a way that seems satisfying. My goal in professional wrestling was always Japan, and preferably New Japan. When I grew up, I never watched like WWF or WWE at the time because we didn't have access to it. You know, I come from Amsterdam. And Netherlands, really small country, does not have a lot of wrestling. I am probably the most successful Dutch wrestler that has ever existed. And I'm sure within 5 to 10 years, someone will come out of there and top everything that I've done, which is obviously a good sign. So we don't have a lot of like heritage or anything. So I grew up watching New Japan because we had a channel called Eurosport. And Eurosport had New Japan Pro Wrestling. So that was my introduction to wrestling. As a whole, and that's what I grew up with, and later on WCW. So New Japan always had a very special place in my heart, and it's kind of also how my style somewhat got orientated, because, you know, I watched that, and as like a 4 or 5 year old, you see two men in a ring fighting, and it was like, obviously Japanese wrestling is much more martial arts influenced, so I started doing martial arts because of what I saw. So right before I moved, there were talks between a company that I worked for that had a good working relationship with New Japan at the time and myself as to bringing me over for, you know, a tour or multiple tours. That was obviously the big question for New Japan. And I had the contract for NXT on my table. And I was like, well, you know, even though New Japan is like, the goal at the time, NXT or WWE at the time, you know, it would have been 3 to 5 year contracts, guaranteed. Whereas with New Japan, you know, they run multiple tours. We don't know what, you know, we don't know. They might have kept it with one tour. So I went with, you know, the route that we all know. So I always felt in the back of my mind that, you know, I still wanted to do New Japan in any capacity, right? And I've worked for them. And when they did the European tours back then, I did some work on them, but not on a scale like we're about to do on Sunday, where it's an actual collaborative event between, you know, two companies. So when Tony made this announcement, you know, I was hoping that I was going to be involved because of, you know, aforementioned. So when he did finally, you know, make the announcements and like, you know, the rumor mill even backstage kind of started coming out because we saw some of the New Japan officials walking around and we saw some of the wrestlers walking around. So like, you know, we all knew something was brewing. And then when it was finally there, it was just like, it's just cool. You know, and we live in such a unique era when it comes to professional wrestling. There is so much going on. There's so much different stuff going on, and everything has its place, which is really, really cool. And I think this absolutely has its place. I think they sold out their 16,000 venue. I think, don't pin me on that, but it is a 16,000 venue, and I think it's sold out. And it's exciting. It's like, it's cool. It's like, I don't think anyone 5-6 years ago would have thought that something like this would come into a somewhat mainstream position, you know, because of the nature of professional wrestling and how it kind of like fluctuates in and out. So now that this is, you know, it's Friday when we're filming this. So in literally 48 hours from now, you know, it's we're there, and it's just very exciting. And I hope that as much as it's exciting for us, it has a special place in my heart due to, like I said, what I said. But I think for the fans, this is a very cool sign and telltale of like, wow, there's like a lot can happen. So if we already have all this, what else is going to happen? You know what I mean? It's the thing that tells a lot of tales at once.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, Tony Khan has touted the success so far already for Forbidden Door, you know, talking about how it already got into the 7 figures, et cetera. So you definitely do see the success and the buzz around, you know, the show. And given the fact that it's the first, you know, co-promotional show between AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling. But I'm so happy that you gave me that background in terms of like, you know, of how you felt about the announcement and everything going behind it, because it was actually going to be one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about today, because, you know, we mentioned New Japan Pro Wrestling and the roots of New Japan Pro Wrestling being more of that shoot style. And with your kickboxing background, it was one of the things where I was going to ask you like, hey, do you want to go to New Japan? And you answered that question, but it's great to hear that because, you know, when you start to think or like imagine certain guys in certain promotions, I think given again, your background in kickboxing and all of that, I just think that it would fit in so well with the New Japan audience.
Yeah, I would hope so. I always remember Kairi Sane at one point telling me how a lot of fans in Japan, because like I did briefly wrestle in Japan for Big Japan. I had about 6 tours for in a course of about 2 years. But you know, with the success that I have now, and with the, you know, with the name that I've built now and the franchise that's built around it, like Kairi used to tell me back when I was still in NXT about like how Japanese wrestling fans were very excited and hoped that I would come back to Japan in this like, you know, with this level of experience. And even that was like 2-3 years ago. And like, obviously these few years have passed and a lot of different directions have been taken. So it would be even more exciting. You know what I mean? Especially this day and age, especially now. So I spoke to Zack Sabre Jr. real briefly. Me and Zack go way back. He's one of my oldest friends in wrestling. And we were talking about the state of wrestling right now in Japan. And obviously fans are not allowed to, you know, cheer and stuff like that. So, you know, they're hoping that the country will, you know, go back to normal as soon as possible, because obviously after we've done this, like one of the last setting goals that I would have is indeed to just wrestle on a New Japan show in Japan. So
exactly. And you kind of mentioned the fact that, you know, that's something that you would want to do. And I think we all want to see it as fans too. Now, as fans, we tend to be like, oh, like I would really love to see, you know, this person versus that person. But I kind of want to get the idea of like in your head, who do you think is somebody that, you know, in ring wise that you can tell a great story with in New Japan Pro Wrestling? Who are some of the guys that you'd just be like, you know what, we can make some magic here?
You know, the entire roster they have, even a lot of their young lions, and obviously on Sunday you'll see one of them, like, you know, even their younger generation is so full of talent. I don't think there's anything ever in New Japan that hasn't walked through their doors with having the potential like to take over, you know, wrestling or bring in something new. I think that's what they're known for. But for me, it's always been Tanahashi. I think him and me would mesh so well, and I'm purely basing that off what he presents as a competitor, how he flows, looking at his footwork, his pacing, his timing. And I understand that a lot. And it's a bit of a vague explanation, but the way he wrestles is something that really connects with me, and the way he thinks about it. Like, obviously, in a different setting, Shibata would have been and it would have been incredible. I would have really loved the opportunity to kind of tangle with Ishii this Sunday, but you know, it is what it is, and unfortunately he got injured. These things happen. That's the nature of the beast as well. But in a single setting or in a Japanese setting, absolutely those three would be, you know, on top of the bill. But then also a guy like Zack Sabre Jr., because him and me have such tremendous history And it's been so long since him and me have like tangled, that now in that platform, in a different setting, with the experience that he has gained, with the experience that I have gained, it would be such an interesting, mix, for him and me.
I think so too. I think that would be phenomenal. So I love all of the names that you mentioned. And now let's go ahead and, you know, touch on Forbidden Door, because you do mention Tomohiro Ishii, who unfortunately, due to injury, had to be removed from the match. So let's talk about this, because we kind of got a lot, I think, on the line here. Like, not only is this such a big pay-per-view, but this is a four-way for the All-Atlantic Championship and, you know, the winner going in and becoming the inaugural champion. So with that being said, with the guys that have been announced in this match, yourself, Pac, Miro, Clark, Connors, who's taking the place of Ishii, for you, what would it mean not only to become the inaugural champion, but it would also be you as, you know, a singles wrestler really going out there and defending that championship?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have to pull this back towards being from the Netherlands again, right? They're like, for a Dutch person to win a first ever title that represents the different countries in the world, that'd be huge. You know, I mean, it would elevate myself. It would mean a lot to my home country, because my country is always watching. As much as there's not a big wrestling culture, a lot of the people involved in certain sports always have their eyes on me, texting me, talking to me, like guys like Rico Verhoeven from Glory. My old trainer, Bob Schreiber, still like keeps in touch with me. There's a lot of people that still like, you know, keep their eyes on what it is that we do. So there is a sense of like pride walking into that tournament alone, you know, and the pressure is on for that same reason as well, because you don't want to let down anyone. You don't want to, you know, you want to be at your best of your ability at that moment. But like, you know, you're in there with someone like Miro, you know, and what can I say about Miro that has already not been said due to the fact of, you know, like, look at what all he's done and look at who he is and look at his previous title reign in the company when he held the TNT championship. He was a force to be reckoned with, but he's always been a force to be reckoned with. Then we have Pac, who's, you know, he's in my opinion, like personal feelings aside, from the perspective of a high flyer, a junior, a true junior high flyer, he's one of the most innovative people that came forward as a high flyer in the last 10 to 15 years. I think if you take him out of the equation, you wouldn't have a Ricochet, you wouldn't have a Will Ospreay, because this is the guy, this is the blueprint. And he was already someone who was influenced by guys like Rey Mysterio and you know, the high flyers of the past, Hayabusa, etc. And he took all of that and recreated this incredible style. Even at age 19, he was just an incredible competitor, and he inspired so many people. But, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes don't realize that he was one of the first ones to kind of like make that mark in the modern era of wrestling, where a lot of people turn their heads like, who is this kid? And then, you know, like I said, they would influence later on the Ricochets, and they would influence the Will Ospreys and stuff. And Clark, like I said, you know, he comes from New Japan. He's a true representative of New Japan, and he has big shoes to fill, because he's filling for Ishii, which is no small feat. But then at the same time, again, because of what New Japan carries and the grueling regiments that New Japan puts their students through, and what they, you know, how they teach these younger kids to become wrestlers, you know, you can't take that out of the equation too. So this man is a walking weapon. You know what I mean? He's a yes, he's going to come in there with the least amount of experience, with the least amount of man, but it also means that he has nothing to lose. And he's also probably, in a certain way, he's one of the most hungriest, because now he's getting an opportunity. And I remember when I was, you know, young, like I'm moving towards 40 now, but like when I was starting out, when I was like in my early 20s, it didn't matter who you were in front of me. I would make sure that you would remember me by the end of the match, physically or mentally. You would know that you would have been in the ring with me. And I'm sure that for him, that's a similar mentality.
Exactly. It kind of feels like a win-win situation for him because, like you said, he has these big shoes to fill, but in turn, he's sort of presented with this huge opportunity to break out in front of, you know, an audience that may not be familiar with him to really be like, oh, who's this guy? Let me take a look at him. And, you know, he's in there when, you know, when you mentioned, you know, Pac, Miro and yourself and, you know, all these great guys, I feel like you can make an argument that this is going to be a really great opportunity for him. And then for you three, I feel like you can make an argument for either one of you guys really becoming the first ever All-Atlantic champion, which I think is pretty awesome. It seems like there's a lot of options on the table.
I think so too. And to touch on Conor like a little bit more, like out of the four of us, he's the least known, but also the least known to all of us. And even though I keep an eye on what people do, he has that level of being unpredictable with them. So he's definitely not someone to be counted out. And I don't think, knowing Miro as I do, I don't think he takes him lightly. Knowing Pac the way I do, I don't think he takes, like, I don't think anyone of us is going to walk in, or at least that should not be the attitude that I would employ with who is this greenhorn. You know what I mean? That's not how I step into this thing, because he's earned his keep and he's earning his keep. And indeed he has big shoes to fill, but also out of everyone, most of the pressure is on him. Like guys like Miro, myself, and we've been in positions like this before. I would even say that I thrive in positions like this. I am best when I'm under pressure. So
that's really great. I love hearing the insight of like how all of this, you know, just everybody's sort of like different spot, different role in all of this. So I do want to ask you, because, you know, we're touching on the injuries, we're talking on the changes made to the Forbidden Door card. Unfortunately, you know, that we had the announcements that, you know, CM Punk can't be there, you know, to wrestle Bryan Danielson as well, and some other changes too. And so, you know, the card for Forbidden Door has been a huge subject amongst wrestling fans. So I do want to ask you, from your perspective, what has been your perception of, you know, the matches that have been announced and how Tony Khan and AEW have essentially, you know, put this show together? What do you think of it?
So it's always, you know, it's always difficult to deal with card. That's also why it always says card subject to change. You know what I mean? Because I've been the victim lately of a few injuries here and there, forcing me to like make some changes as well. It happens, but I think when you have a talent pool that's as deep as New Japan's and AEW, I wouldn't say people are interchangeable, but the switches that have been made have made sure that the intrigue has remained. You know, of course, it's unfortunate that we're not going to get to see Tanahashi versus CM Punk. You know what I mean? I think on a grand scale, I think that's a match that a lot of people had on their bingo cards. You know, and but if it's thrown out there now, I think everybody understands that eventually it will happen one way or the other. If the world title is involved at that point, I don't know. But it's done in a way that the intrigue, you know, will remain. I don't look at this card and go, well, that's a downgrade. No, it's not. It's just a change, and it's a change that is unfortunate. It had to happen. But it's still a very exciting card. You get to see a lot of new people. You get to see a lot of people that have been in AEW for a long time. You get to see people that have been in New Japan for a long time. You get to see a lot of mainstays, a lot of familiar faces, and a lot of, like, you know, New Japan true spirits. And the same as with AEW, you get a lot of true spirits. And you get people who are relatively new to the mold, like myself, in terms of AEW, but then have made a name for themselves and previously where I come from. So you know who I am, you know who Pac, you know who Miro is, you know these people. So and even kind of historically, having a women's match on the card is, you know, like, again, it all adds. It's all, I think there's something for everyone. And I know that's a cliche thing to say, but I think this really does have that. There's something for everyone. It's honor two of wrestling's biggest banners, collaborating. What's not to love?
Exactly. And I know you say it sounds like a cliche to say there's something for everybody, but I love pay-per-views when there's something for everybody, just because, you know, everybody gravitates to different things and likes certain different styles of wrestling, like certain types of wrestlers, etc. So now I do want to go ahead and jump into talk about the House of Black, because, you know, I recently got to chat with Brody King and he kind of gave me a little bit of a rundown of how, you know, all of this came to be, how he basically told me that you and him were basically talking about, you know, kind of doing something together. And then this ended up being brought into AEW. That's how he got brought in, etc. But I also wanted to ask you not just about your thoughts on Brody King coming in and joining you on House of Black, but also to Buddy Matthews, because he's somebody that, you know, you guys have had, you know, working relationships with in the past. So how much input in terms of bringing him in to AEW and having him incorporated into House of Black did you have, and how do you feel about both guys essentially joining you?
When I was in my early stages of my fights with Cody, there was a moment where on the stage I gave Cody a knee. He fell down, and I told him that this was no longer his house, but it was the House of Black. And then fans, because the camera audio was on when I said it, fans started chanting House of Black. At that point, it kind of got me thinking, and then later on, it was a hashtag on Twitter. So I am not, clearly not the biggest social media lights in the world. It caught my attention, and I started thinking, and I always had ideas, you know, because even this installment of what is the House of Black is something that I did over 13, 14 years ago. With similar stables, with like the Sumerian Death Squad and stuff like that, but now doing it with all the expertise that I have, all the knowledge that I have, with, you know, the experience that I've gained over the course of those added 14 years on top of what I was already wrestling, and the success that I had back then, which is ironically the thing that got me noticed to, you know, move towards the United States, etc. I think in this installment, I think it makes a lot of sense to have a guy like Brody King and someone as Buddy Matthews. They have always been intertwined with me somehow, some way. And I presented the idea to Tony and said, look, this thing kind of grew wings. And if we were to make this an actual existing faction, an actually existing thing, what do you think about Brody King? What do you think about Buddy Matthews? And he was sold on the idea literally instantly when I told him what it would pertain and how I envision what it is and how it would be presented. And, you know, because of the way I portrayed myself initially in AEW and the ideas that I gave him and the success of the me and Cody fights that we had and the whole program, etc., I build a lot of trust up with Tony, and I said, look, we can do it this way. I have all these thoughts. He gave me his thoughts. We kind of put them together. And we, you know, we made it work. And both gentlemen, like, were brought in different ways. But a guy like Brody King, who was at the time, I wouldn't say he was unknown, but he definitely was making a name for himself, specifically like in Ring of Honor. And he had just like myself, he has a very distinct look. And him and me have been friends for a very long time. So I had to, like, kind of, you know, make the fans think that they figured it out when I started doing, like, you know, certain subliminal images, subliminal messages. And at that point, I do incorporate a lot of, like, of my social media and things that I would say in promos and, you know, alluding to certain things, because I wanted people to figure it out themselves. So by the time he would actually make his presence known, the reward was for the fans as to see. I knew it. So I had to influence them in a way that they thought that they figured it out. And with Buddy, it was almost the exact opposite. And I almost practically gave it to them. And then I almost took it away from them by reacting the way that I did the night that, you know, Mr. Matthews made his debut. But both of them, the reactions that we got were more than satisfactory. The numbers that we did in terms of, like, our merchandising and stuff like that has proven that it's a massive success, and, you know, and still moving up. There's literally nothing about it that I can really complain about. Nothing ever goes smooth, especially not in this business. You know, you get dealt with setbacks, you get dealt with frustrations, you get dealt with, you know, you have to deal with certain things not going the way you want them to go. And that's part of the natural process. But if you can overcome these things and you can move around with them, the end result will always be so much more worth it, because now you had to struggle to obtain something versus it being given to you. So, you know, where in the beginning, I feel that me and Tony were very much looking for what the position was and what the spot was. We have now have got a clearer idea on the landscape of AEW, where to place it, and slowly but surely, meticulously giving it a bigger and better home moving forward. And I think the last 2 months, 3 months, we've done that. And, you know, I'm always a big fan of small climbs. I don't want to go from point A to point Z in the span of a week. I would rather, you know, move through all the letters until we have the entire alphabet and then there, because I feel like if I can take an audience on a journey and I tell them something, I give them like little pieces of the puzzle each week versus giving them everything each week, I feel they can really connect to it and they can grow with it and they feel more a part of it, especially when I involve them. And that's exactly what we've done. And again, looking at it from a statistic point of view, it's done exactly what we hoped it would do. And hopefully it will do more moving forward. So I literally cannot complain on that aspect.
Awesome. I have two more questions for you. The first one being is that, you know, we talk about all of the cool stuff that you guys have come up with the House of Black, et cetera. You know, the presentation is great. The vignettes that you guys have been doing have been pretty, pretty awesome to see and very, very creative. The other incorporation of this has been Julia Hart. Can you tell us about the idea and how that came about to have her incorporated into this?
So when I can't, because there's like still a lot of things that are being unraveled in that regards, and it's still a part of the journey that I don't want to completely give away. Julia was an idea that sprung up on us as one of the stories was unfolding, and this thought process that we had that certain elements that I do changes people or influences people, and whether or not that is supernatural, I always let people decide, because I, for the most part, actually don't do anything that I would describe as supernatural. I think a lot of what I do or present is psychological, because I find that much more terrifying. You know, the human mind is a terrifying thing, implemented incorrectly, especially. And so we started kind of like messing with this idea of having someone, how do I explain this without giving it away? Having someone thinking that they were influenced because they wanted to get away from something versus actually being influenced. And then in our own way, kind of like, I wouldn't say exploiting that, but using that. There's a big part of this whole thing that was a big misdirection on purpose. And it was the night that everybody thought it was going to happen. That was completely done on purpose, because I was already thinking 3-4 weeks ahead. So I got super happy when everybody got mad, because I was like, well, if you're going to mad now, you're going to love, you know what I mean? Because it's not about doing what people want you to do when they want you to do it. It's about, you know, flipping the script on them and getting them mad. Because then eventually when you do it, it's much more you being in control, and the payoff is bigger. And I think that is what we needed, because it also meant that we could immediately give a layer to Julia that she previously didn't have yet. So and slowly we're moving forward. She definitely has her, you know, she has her homework, and she definitely has to, you know, earn her keep in that regard. And she's working hard, and, you know, we keep her on her toes. And, you know, the future will see what it will hold for her. But as far as now, I like the idea of her being somewhat an unpredictable wild card that's just in the flow. And what her role is yet, I'm not going to give away. I'm not going to say. And time will tell.
I think it's a pretty exciting aspect to add to the House of Black, you know, another layer on top of it. It's been pretty cool to see that unfold, especially because you mentioned there was something that, you know, she didn't have this portion to her character just yet. So to kind of see this, you know, added to who she is, it's pretty exciting to see how it's starting to develop. So Malachi, I know we have just a couple minutes left. So my last question to you is sort of a general broad question that I like to ask all my guests, really. But in terms of like goals for yourself in AEW, whether it be short term, long term, goals, etc., you can maybe shine a light on some of those.
Yes, because, you know, and in a weird sense, they kind of change a lot. I don't think I've ever been the guy that has chased belts. I feel that I am much more someone who disrupts. And I think disrupting is good. I think presenting a layer of, well, he's an asshole, but he kind of makes a point. He's kind of like what I like. Because the general message of what we do is actually not even that negative. But it's also a part that a lot of people don't want to admit they do or see around them. There's a lot of commentary on there. If you're willing to listen, and I think that's also the fun thing, because it's like it makes a clear divide between the people that are actually mentioned and those people hating it, and the people who love it and they get it and they admit to it. It's not for everyone. And I don't want it to be for everyone, because my entire life I've not been for everyone. And this idea that, you know, you have to be liked by everyone is a farce. You know, you can't be liked by everyone. So like it walks in both lines of the argument. Now, that being said, do I want to proceed to chase titles? Yes, I do. But I think if it were not to happen, it wouldn't harm me. I don't think that if I would never be positioned in a sense where it wouldn't come across my path. As long as I'm involved with the people that are crossing those paths, I think that's an important thing as well. As long as I can give them something or I can take something from them that helps me or helps the general aesthetic or the general story of what it is that we're doing. I think that for me is something that I like carving out. I like carving out that legacy. I like something where in 50 years time, when I'm long gone off this planet, that people go back and say, oh, that's what he meant. Did he mean this when he said that? You know, and it slowly unfolds, and that's what I like. And, you know, I don't want it to be a one thing, because the one thing that always keeps me sane, and it's always done, and maybe it's because I'm Dutch and we're very sober minded people. This will all end one day. All of this will come to a screeching halt. All of this will go away. And this is always a weird thing. I never consider myself to be famous, because it's always kind of like, yeah, but in the realm of what exactly? You know what I mean? Like, I have this very unique world that I walk in for the better part of my life. And in that world, I'm obviously who I am, and people know who I am. But I never feel that I left Amsterdam in that regard. I'd never disbanded the kid that was into like hardcore and stuff like that, and like alternative like forms of metal and stuff like that, and dressed the way that he wanted to dress, and, you know, did what he wanted to do, and was always like mesmerized by how the world worked, and had his you know, his gaze on the world and not just on like a small little part of it. Like, I think one of the things that I always tell people whenever I train with them is like, you know, you got to think globally, not locally, because if you keep your mind on small things and one thing, and, you know, you, and we see a lot of that right now, like nowadays, with people throwing the most like ludicrous arguments at each other, it's because they're all like focused on one thing, and it keeps them from, you know, growing further. And I feel that has never been me. And my goal sometimes like exceeds things that are for me personally, bigger than just titles. But again, I also feel that if I were to chase a title, I can apply that same ideology, that same thought process on something as what would be my title reign, and like, you know, do it, like make it in my own way and create something in my own way. Cause I think that's for me, what it comes down to is creating and giving something different, giving something new. And again, I don't care if you don't like it. Like, I listen to what the numbers say. I listen to what merchandise does. I listen to what, you know, the echo is of the audience. And like the amount of times every week that I get people tagging me in pictures of them getting the House of Black logos tattooed or the masks tattooed or like, you know, the merchandise, the shirts, you know, it reaching out to further than just like professional. It goes into like the world of like Hollywood and stuff like that. And I get feedback from that. And, you know, it's just amazing how these like things that you can conjure up can create so much more than just a pro wrestling platform. And I think that is the goal, to transcend what is pro wrestling to an extent, but still being true to what pro wrestling is. But just do it your own way. And I think that's also the formula that I think a lot of young people, and maybe not just young people in wrestling, but just young people in life, should be aspiring to do, to extend beyond the reaches of what they think they should or can. So title reigns, absolutely. But I think that I can dwell in multiple worlds and still have my presence known.
I love that. I got to tell you, like, everything that you're saying right now is just so fascinating to me. And it's almost like, you know, kind of stepping outside of things and seeing like a bigger, larger picture, and also seeing all of the different like things that you can do, especially with, you know, everything that you've sort of built, you know, with the House of Black, et cetera, even just yourself and things that you're a fan of. So really, really awesome. Malachi, I feel like we can talk forever. I would love to chat with you more. But before we wrap things up, please let the people know where they can find you, where they can check out some of your stuff. Sure. Plug anything you'd like to plug in.
Yep. Well, obviously, you can find me on Instagram as Malachi Black, spelt with an X, the old BLXCK. You can find me on Black Mask Clothing, which is my own clothing brand. You can find me on AW Shop if you were looking for some merchandise. I am on Twitter. I just don't do much with Twitter because obviously I feel like the downfall of the world is unfolding itself on Twitter. And you can find me every Wednesday or Friday night on AW. So,
awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'm going to post all of the links in the description box below, but it's seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. Until next time, I'm Denise Salcedo. This is Malachi Black. We'll see you guys next time. Bye, everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.